It is Monday, October 26th for Patreon subscribers. It is Tuesday, October 27th for the rest of yous. Thank you for tuning in to Menace of Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. We had Big Ten football. Finally. The Buckeyes got a huge win. Penn State got upset. Greg Schiano's 1-0 at Rutgers. Michigan State is a train wreck. Graham Mertz at Wisconsin was an absolute stud. And, I mean, we're going to dive into it all on this show. So this is a Big Ten recap show. We're going to talk about the national landscape a little bit. But before we do, we just want to thank everyone that came out and made possible our event on Saturday, the Ace on Lane. If you haven't heard about it or want to look into it, it was awesome. I was worried about the COVID stuff and distancing and masks, but it was big time, man. We had great food. We had wings from Shade on the Canal. Revelry Tavern hooked us up with some food. We had all kinds of great food. We had wings, pulled pork, barbecue, mac and cheese, chips, all kinds of great food. And then we had the peanut butter whiskey from Screwball was bomb. It was so good. People were crushing it. And of course, Buckeye Vodka, one of the crispest vodkas in the lands, supported our event. And so people were drinking that. There was beer. Truly sponsored it. It was awesome. Good turnout. We did a live show pregame. I'm going to put that on our feed so you can listen to it. But Johnny Lunsford from Scarlet and Great joined me along with Stephanie Odie for the pregame live show. And then we watched the game. Watched the Buckeyes get a big victory. So if you're interested, we're having them for all the home games. Next one up is Rutgers, Greg Schiano's revenge tour to Columbus to come back and try to upset the Buckeyes. Night game, we got heaters at the outdoor spaces, and it's all covered. It's all awesome. Oh, and our VIP, we had a VIP balcony area that was sweet. I mean, we had a bourbon bar up there, Oliva cigars, and a couple of Padrones were up there. If you're a cigar person, there was good bourbon up there, a separate private bar, so you didn't have to really wait for drinks. It was awesome. But anyways, check it out. It's on our website, menacesports.com. Go to the store. You'll see all the the game day watch party experience tickets on sale on our website. So make sure you check that out. But we also need to update you on our gambling picks, Menace to Picks. You got to check it out. If you haven't followed them, we are up something crazy, like 140 units. And how that works is like, we'll put out a recommendation. Let's say it is Garrett Wilson. Here was one that was an absolute steal. Was Garrett Wilson over or under 4 catches? I think it was 4. So that was a steal. We put 20 units on it. And that means if you have 100 units in your bankroll, it could be $100, $1,000. You take 20 of those 100 units. That's a percentage, 20% of your bankroll, put it on Garrett Wilson to have over 4 catches. He did. We cashed it immediately. I think it was almost the first half we cashed it. We did the same thing for, who was it? Oh, Tyler Boyd from Cincinnati on Sunday's game. Same thing. Over under 5.5 catches. He had 7 by halftime. So anyways, at Menace to Picks, if you want to check it out on Twitter, the best place to find it. And then also patreon.com/Menace to Picks. We are crushing it right now. I mean, our bankroll is up $1,090 just from the weekend. That's with 109 units from the weekend, 145 since Thursday or something like that. Don't quote me on the stats. You can look it up on our Twitter, our record and our percentages. So if you're a gambler, I'm telling you, $25 a month is less than $1 a day, and you get phenomenal picks. We're on a heater, and this is our second heater in 2 weeks. So check it out. But while we're talking gambling, let's hear from our sponsor, MyBookie. Ever since I started out, people have been asking me for advice on all kinds of things. But in covering sports, it's usually about who's going to win and what team they should bet on. You got the Patriots or 49ers this week, Bucks or Raiders. Well, the best piece of advice I can give to anyone is where you're betting. Where? It's just as important as who you're betting on. It's why I always tell people to visit MyBookie. They've got deposit matches, free bets, and huge cash prize contests for you to take advantage of all season long. NFL action? Check. College ball? Check. Plus, they have a mobile-friendly website and top-of-the-line customer service, making their platform a one-stop shop for all your betting needs. MyBookie offers action on everything from championship futures to NFL in-game live betting, making sure you're covered every step of the way. Congrats if you were one of the ones to cash in on the generous early season odds on the Lakers to win the NBA championship. Sign up at MyBookie today, and when you do, use our promo code MENACE to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code MENACE for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, all the major sports, and more await you. Sign up today and begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. There you have it. Free money. Not free, but gambling advice. We tell you what to pick. Get your free money at MyBookie and go win some cash-ish. That's what we're here for. Side note, I don't know. I saw this article and I wanted to share it. It's called collegefootballwinning.com is where I found it. But it's the top 10 best college football coaches against the spread. Guys against the spread. Urban Meyer, how about this? If you put $110 on every game that Urban Meyer ever coached to win $100 and you bet against him with the points, right? Or giving the points, you bet against the spread, you would have profited $2,850. The only coach on this list that was higher, how about this? Kansas State's Bill Snyder. If you'd have done the same thing for his career, granted, his career was like 8 million years long, but you would have profited a whopping $3,700 if you just bet every game against the spread. So wild. Really wild, but it's really funny. Check it out. College football winning. It goes through like the top 10 coaches. Paul Johnson's on there. Bronco Mendenhall, Steve Spurrier, Nick Saban. Mike Gundy is actually their number one spot. But thought I enjoyed it. It was really a good read. I thought I'd shout it out so that you guys could read it if you're interested. But anyways, enough about all that, man. We got Big Ten football to break down. We got the Buckeyes to dive into. So enough about that. Let's get to the show.
Justin Fields. Columbus, 51 yards. And it's blocked. Ohio State got it. Blocked out of the air. Towards the end zone. Touchdown, Buckeyes. Here's Fields over the middle. Touchdown, Buckeyes.
Hit anyway. Sean Wade. Off the corner, and Lawrence is still down. Fields again, looking to throw. Loops the ball up. Leaping catch by Garrett Wilson. Down inside the 10 as the freshman makes a play.
Unbelievable catch by the true freshman from Austin, Texas.
And even more, Sermon. Still on the move. Sermon to the corner. Touchdown.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.
All right, here we go. Let's go. Big Ten football. Not doing players of the week this week, but we are going to do a shout out. Our player of the week was freshman quarterback Wisconsin's Graham Mertz. They rolled Illinois, and he had a day like Justin Fields had, just a little bit more explosive in the touchdown category. He was 20 of 21, 247 yards, 5 touchdowns, 100% adjusted completion percentage, and 4 for 4 on deep balls. So he just went off. And then this bullshit with the COVID. Oh my gosh. So Graham Mertz on Sunday tests positive for COVID. Let's think about this now. The Big Ten has screwed this up so bad. There's no bye week, so there's no wiggle room. Like, games are going to get canceled. They can't get postponed. There's nowhere to postpone them to unless you're going to play 2 games in a week. So they screwed that up, and then they put in this rule. 3 weeks if you test positive, you have to be you can't play for 3 weeks. And unfortunately for the Michigan Wolverines, that means Graham Mertz will not be able to play against Michigan in 3 weeks. Think about that. Wisconsin's going to be out there starting quarterback when they play Michigan in 3 weeks on some bullshit. Like, I don't know if anyone studies analytics and the data, but no one is contagious 20 days later. No one, let alone a college age kid. He's probably not contagious after like 4 days, if we're being realistic. Just ridiculous. So hope his recovery goes well. You know, hopefully he gets healthy, but just another abomination by Kevin Warren in the Big Ten with these bullshit rules. And Doug Borchers, if he really recommended that, that's just a joke. But a quick national landscape update. North Carolina rolled number 23 NC State, got a ranked win, 48-21, was a big win. UNC's hopefully picking up some momentum. My dark horse in the playoff race, Oklahoma State beat number 17 Iowa State, 24-21. And really, I'll tell you what, a heartbreaking news. Jaylen Waddle, if you didn't see it, probably one of the best, not probably, he's one of the top 3-4 receivers in the United States of America, broke his ankle on Saturday. So Alabama loses a huge playmaker on that offense. It'd be interesting to see how that affects their overall production, because he is a critical piece. And Alabama loses a big-time player. That's you never want to say it's good, but everyone in the country will benefit from that because he was a force to be reckoned with. The first game we're going to talk a little bit about, even though it wasn't a good game, it was an absolute ass-kicking, is Notre Dame just throttled Pat Narduzzi and Pitt. And it was an ass-kicking up and down the field in every category, every statistic. Pitt looked terrible. They couldn't throw the ball. They threw three interceptions, completed 37% of their passes. They had 12 missed tackles. Notre Dame only had six. They had 162 total yards. They were 3-for-13 on third down. Notre Dame had the ball for 41 minutes. There's 60 minutes in a game. So they had the ball more than double the time Pitt had the ball. I will tell you this. We're going to get to it in a second, but Notre Dame's defense is proving to be a solid defense. I'm not going to say they're great, but they're solid because Ian Book wasn't much better than he has been all year. He only completed 53% of his passes, 5 of 11 over 10 yards, so 45% on actual quarterback throws. But what he did do that he hasn't been doing is he hit 2 out of 3 deep balls for 2 touchdowns. So I'm still not a believer. I'm not a believer. But, I mean, you get a guy that shows some flashes or some signs that he might improve. That's good. That's good for college football. And as I've said before, I want Notre Dame to be good. I mean, 11 of 18 on third down is outstanding. It really is. They didn't run the ball well, 2.3 yards per carry, 115 yards on 50 attempts. So it was not a absolute offensive firepower game for Notre Dame, but they played well. I mean, they played really well overall, and the offense just is sputtering a little bit. But their defense is the reason they're winning games and how they beat Pitt so handily because they have the third highest graded defense in America. You could take opponents into account and all of that, but Notre Dame, I thought I needed to see a big win. Now, it's not against a great opponent, but at least it was a game like Notre Dame should have, not some 24-21 win over Pitt. That 45-3, that's convincing, and it was an ass-kicking. A couple other news, Cincinnati made a statement. I'm telling you, watch out. Cincinnati might make a case here soon. The UCF of 2020. They played number 16 SMU and beat that ass 42-13. Luke Fickell is crushing it down in Cincinnati. So we're going to have to take a look and dive into one of their games coming up because Cincinnati looks like they're for real. In other news, how about this one? Greg Schiano is 1-0 as the head coach at Rutgers right now. Unbelievable. He beat Sparty, Michigan State, 38-27. And I really dove into this because I go on every week I go on Mad Dog Radio. It's up in East Lansing. It's a sports show. And Mad Dog and I always talk about the landscape of the Big Ten and national college football. But of course, there's a lot of Spartan listeners. And so I dove into this game, one, because I know Greg. I know, and I knew that I would have to talk about it on Mad Dog's show. And it's just unbelievable. This quarterback at Michigan State is a train wreck. He's rough. I mean, he was 0-for-6 on deep balls with 2 interceptions. And Buckeye fans, one of those was to former Ohio State safety Brendan White. If you don't remember him, he was like the defensive MVP of the Rose Bowl. And then we ran him out of town for some reason. Halfley did. But yeah, so he had a pick. This kid, Rocky Lombardi, threw 0-for-6 on deep balls with 2 interceptions. 5 of those misses were to their receiver, Jalen Naylor, who's a fast kid. I mean, he's a deep threat, but he missed him 5 times. He completed 52% over 10 yards, 7-for-17 on third down, which is under 50%, which is never good. And then the real reason, 7 turnovers. You hear me? Michigan State had 7 turnovers. You can't give another team the ball 7 times and expect to win a game. They averaged 1.3 yards per rush. Bo Melton, the one receiver, had 2 drops and was still the leading receiver. It was just a nightmare for the Michigan State offense. Michigan State's defense played well. I mean, it was just an absolute train wreck offense. And so I don't know if Mark D'Antonio was really the problem. Maybe it's just the offense in general. Maybe it's hard to play offensive football up in East Lansing. I don't know. But it was disgusting. And so Greg Schiano gets his first win. 1-0 as a head coach at Rutgers. And he was on his revenge tour. If you want to, I mentioned it before, the Aeson Lane, we're going to be down there right on campus, right by the horseshoe for Greg Schiano coming back to Columbus to prove Buckeye Nation he was not the problem. He's going to make a statement on the Buckeyes. I'll tell you what, you start getting into some of these games this weekend. Michigan, Minnesota, we're going to talk about that one first. What a game by the Wolverines. So the game starts off, Minnesota's on fire. So that Michigan gets the ball, they force a punt, they block the punt. The same type of scheme Ohio State used with Chris Olave to block the punt against Michigan. They did a little twist up the middle. They block the punt and quick score and go up 7 points, 7-0. Then it's tied up 7-7, and then Minnesota has a play-action pass. The running back doesn't see the blitzer. Blitzer just blindsides Tanner Morgan for a fumble, or it was kind of a fumble, kind of a half throw when he got hit, and right in the 300-pound D lineman's lap, and he took it back for a touchdown, which is every fat guy's dream, right? Being a national TV, and you get to score a touchdown. So here's the issue that I saw, and I wanted to bring it up. Play action pass, what is that? That is where you have to show a run play, right, to get people to bite up, and then you pull it out and you throw a ball. That's very simple terms of what play action pass is. So that running back that is doing a run fake is responsible for second level blitzers. Depending on the scheme, it could be like the right side, second level, it could be coast to coast. Depending on how they scheme their protection and what protection they called, he is responsible for the second level players, right? So if you see a blitz, or if on the snap a blitzer triggers, you have to do what's called FTF. That was our rule always. FTF, fuck the fake. There's no more fake. It's a blitz. You don't need to fake anyone. They're already short in coverage. Fuck the fake. Go block the blitzer. Well, this son of a bitch did not see it. He was blind to it. And he just run faked, hard run action. And my gosh, Tanner Morgan came off and just got lit up. So you look at the game, right? It's because Michigan won the game 49-24. Minnesota handed Michigan 21 points. They had the blindside sack fumble for a TD. They gave up a kickoff return to the 9-yard line that was 7 more points. And they tried a fake punt that failed and essentially gave them their third touchdown. It was just an ass kicking of all across the board. And I will tell you this, Michigan ran the ball extremely well, 8.2 yards per carry. They threw the ball decent, 60% for 225 yards. But what they didn't do is they didn't turn the ball over, and they had 8 missed tackles. That tells me that Jim Harbaugh did something right with COVID and to get his team ready to play. That's what I've said from the beginning I would be most interested to see is sloppy ball security, turning the ball over, because that's a non-talent issue. That's just learning how to hold the ball and making it routine and habit. It's habitual. And they had single-digit missed tackles. That's huge. That could speak two ways. One, to how efficiently Michigan tackles, or two, to the lack of dynamic playmakers at Minnesota. Either way, win for Jim Harbaugh. And then Joe Milton, they said Cam Newton 2.0. This kid is Cam Newton 2.0. He looked really good. That's all I'll say. He did look really good. 15 of 22, 68%, 226 yards, touchdown. He was only 1 for 4 on deep balls, but 5 for 10 on over 10 yards. That's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. And the O-line pass pro'd well. They only allowed 4 total QB pressures, 4 in the whole game. Now, he struggled on those 4 pressure plays. He was 0% completion. But this team, they looked pretty good. The run game was absolutely dynamic. Hassan Haskins, 14 yards per carry. Zach Charbonnet, almost 18 yards per carry. Joe Milton, the quarterback's, almost 7 yards per carry. Those three combined had 18 carries, 204 yards, 11.3 yards per carry. Every time they touched the ball, those three in the run game, they averaged 11 yards. That's first and 10, first down. Get a first down. I mean, you don't even get to second down ever. And they had 4 touchdowns. So the run game was absolutely dynamic. Joe Milton was really good, and the defense was phenomenal. I mean, they're number 1 in the Big Ten right now in sacks. They have recorded 5 sacks against Minnesota. They stopped the run really well, 3.1 yards per carry. The kid, Quiddy Pay, it was a monster. He had 6 total QB pressures, 2 sacks, and 3 hurries. They had 1 interception, 1 fumble for a touchdown. It was the absolute best-case scenario for Jim Harbaugh and Michigan fans. And I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse, but it's the best I've seen Michigan look early in the season since I can remember. Brady Hoke had some solid teams. I get it. He wasn't the final product that Michigan fans wanted as far as wins and bowl games, but he always had a tough team that looked well coached. That team, Don Brown has that defense playing. I know it's one game, so we'll see if they can continue. Fortunately, they don't have to play Graham Mertz, so we'll get Wisconsin's backup quarterback in 3 weeks. But it's all you got to give credit where credit's due, right? Michigan looked solid, better than solid. They looked really, really good. So I thought it was a huge win for them. It was a ranked win, finally, for Jim Harbaugh. So that's good news. And I think it's you got a chance that the Buckeyes are going to have their hands full at the end of the year. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, this Buckeye team is solid, but we're going to get to them in a minute. They got some things that we still need to learn. You know how I am about what did we learn. So that was one huge game in the Big Ten, and Indiana Penn State. Wow. Wow. If you didn't watch that game, go find it like on YouTube TV or DVR or something. Holy cow. That game was unbelievable. It started off, I mean, you talk about a bad first half. Penn State quarterback Sean Clifford had about as bad of a first half as I've ever remember. The worst throw of the 2020 college football season, he had his little slip screen, right, where he drops back, the running back acts like he's in pass pro, and then slips past the rushers, and the linemen go out and block for him, right? It's called a slip screen. He threw it 10 yards over the running back's head right to the corner for an interception. And the second worst throw of this college football season was similar. It was on a crossing route. He threw it at least 5 yards over that kid's head for another interception. And then he pulled the ball on a zone read and handed it to the Indiana's D lineman. All in the first half. He had three turnovers that were just him. I mean, it wasn't like he got hit. It wasn't the receiver was covered. He threw the ball and handed the ball to Indiana three times. So they're down 17-7 at half. And it was like, uh-oh, what's happening to Penn State? So then they battle back and tie it up with 1:44 left in the game. The only thing you have to do is not allow them to get the ball back, right? You just run the ball, pound the ball, don't give them the ball back. And it's game over, right? You're up by one. They were up by one at that point, and you just don't give the ball back. So Indiana lets them score. If you haven't seen the play, it's wild. And we've taught it. I've never seen it done in a game that I was a part of. But what you do is it's a situation. You call your defense, and you have a tag on it. You say alert score or let them score, right? So then your defense, and you watch it, Indiana's left side of the defense, like the ball snapped, and they like kind of start walking off out of the way, like moving out of the way, walking towards the sideline. And you could tell that Isaiah Ford from Penn State had no idea what was going on. He hit the crease, got through the hole, and realized guys are just walking, like they're not even trying to tackle me. And he realized something ain't right here at about the 1.5 yard line. And he looked to the sideline, like towards his coaches, like, should I be doing this? Like, nobody told me anything. And he crossed the goal line and scored. So now Penn State scores. They're up 28-20. And Indiana's going to get the ball back. And I wanted to give you some perspective here. You have to teach these kids those random things in training camp. We used to have checklists of all the random ass situations that come up. And you have to give them something, a tool to remind them. Like we had a bunch of them. That one right there, we called alert down. It meant you do not go out of bounds and you do not score a touchdown. That's the rule. Right? Alert down. So we would call a play and at the end of it say alert down. The other thing, we also had alert clock. That's where you're going to run a play, but you remind your kids there's only 14 seconds left. So when alert clock is tagged, you catch the ball, get down immediately, and then get the ball to the referee. You're trying to spike the ball, alert clock. And there's a number of them. I'll probably go through them in some episode, but you have to teach your kids that. In training camp, and Penn State had time. They had extra practices. I mentioned it before. I talked to the Ohio State coaches. They had 40 practices before their first game. That's probably what, 12 more than normal training camp. So you had 12 extra practices. They had to cover all these situations. And obviously they score a touchdown to go up 8. We wouldn't be talking about that in such depth, except two big pass plays later. Indiana's QB sneaks it in with 22 seconds to go, 28-26. Penn State's still up. Then they run a QB draw to tie it up at 28, and we're going to overtime. But the most bizarre coaching decision I have ever seen, right? 22 seconds left or something like that. They score a touchdown, go for two, they get it. Tom Allen decides that he's going to kick an onside kick with 22 seconds left. Think about how dumb that is, all right? The only way you lose... Here's your options. You kick it deep, right? They return it and you hopefully tackle them. You squib it deep to try to prevent them from setting up a good return. That's what most coaches would do. I didn't even think this was an option, but an onside kick. Why? What the fuck are you doing, Tom Allen? Penn State ends up getting a shot to win it with 3 seconds left because they got that onside kick. They move the ball a little bit and they go to kick a 57-yard field goal with 3 seconds left to win the game. And I mean, the kid almost made it. If it was at 54, it just clears the uprights. So he was just a little bit short. And I don't understand why he would give them the option. Or it blows my mind. What you do is you squib kick it deep. They don't get a great return because it's a squib kick. Hopefully the up back catches it, not the returner. You get them tackled, and then they ended up taking it. They end up taking a knee. They're not going to try to win the game from their own side of the field. They take a knee. You go to overtime. Just wild. So they go to overtime. Both teams score in overtime, right? Michigan. Penn State scores first, kicks the extra point. Indiana gets the ball. Indiana scores, and they make the decision to go for two. One play, game on the line. And it was unbelievable. So they called a pass play. The quarterback scrambles. And if you haven't seen it, you have to see it. I mean, it reminded me of Space Jam with Michael Jordan when he's at half court and has to dunk and his arm just starts growing and lengthening. That's what it was like. This kid dove and I felt like his arm like grew 6 inches for the tip of the ball to cross the goal line. A lot of people ask me, did I think it was a touchdown? Yes, I do. Here's why. The touchdown is scored the very second the first molecule of that football crosses the very beginning of the white of the goal line. So you don't need to get it in the end zone and cross the white line. It's when that very tip of the football breaches the very front edge of that white painted line, and it has to be inside the pylon. When I saw it, before it touches out of bounds, that point had already breached the white inside the pylon. Game over. The sideline, and they reviewed it, and when they said it was a touchdown, they called it, which I guess 2 points good, the sidelines exploded. I mean, Indiana was obviously thrilled with the upset. But here's what's crazy. I watched the game, and I felt like I watched a scary movie or something. Then I went back and looked at the analytics, and Penn State dominated. Outside of Sean Clifford's first half mishaps, they dominated this entire game. I mean, on every phase. So I bring this up for Buckeye fans. Don't think you're getting some Penn State team that just got whooped up on by Indiana. No. Their quarterback made some dumbass decisions, and I'm going to tell you why they lost in a second. But listen to this. Penn State dominated Indiana. 27 first downs to 16. 250 yards rushing to 41. 4.8 yards per carry to 1.6. 238 yards passing to 170 yards passing. 3 passing TDs to 1. 53% on third down, 33% on third down. It's like every analytic, every category, they dominated Penn State. Penn State dominated Indiana, and Indiana won the game. And they lost the game for two reasons, right? Those mistakes that Sean Clifford made, but their defense got 2 turnovers, so it was the turnover ratio was 3-2, so that's one reason. They had one more turnover than Indiana had. And the other reason that people are not talking about, I promise you, is their red zone offense was awful, and they missed 3 field goals in the game. So the one was 57 yards. It wasn't even their normal kicker. It was their strong leg kicker who just apparently has the leg to try to get it there from 60. So they missed 2 legit field goals, one from like 24 yards or something. They had 6 trips into the red zone. Penn State did. They only scored 3 touchdowns and 0 field goals. My big thing is touchdowns in the red zone. I could care less teams that, they're 100% score in the red zone. Like, yeah, no shit. You're supposed to score in the red zone. If you can't kick a field goal once you're already inside the 25, you're terrible. But that's what they did. So they were 50% touchdowns in the red zone, which is not good, and then 0 field goals. They left the red zone 3 times without points. On the other side, Indiana had 5 red zone trips. They got 4 touchdowns and a field goal. So Indiana got points every time they were in the red zone, and they got 1 extra touchdown over Penn State in the red zone. They got points every time, and that's it. That's what happened. Honestly, one of the most unlikely and shocking games I've seen since I got into college football 18 years ago. It came down to red zone offense and red zone defense. And it's just, I just reflect because in my career, Urban Meyer was a fanatic about red zone. Every Wednesday was a red zone day. Every Wednesday, the whole year. Every Wednesday, we were down in the red zone. So the offense could get better and the defense could get better at red zone defense and offense. Because that is it. Like, that is the last stand, right? You can be great at running the football and throwing the football, but when you get down there, the whole game changes, right? There's a backstop now. Coverages are different. DBs don't have to worry about you running by them 40 yards. So they sit on everything. It's the wildest thing in sport because everything fundamentally changes. Coverages are radically different. And offenses do a lot of trick plays and a lot of schemed up route combinations. It is entirely a separate game. 2-minute offense and red zone offense are the two situations that are just, it's like a different game. It's not even the same game as first and 10 from your own 25. The offense is different. Everything's schemed up. The defense is different. It's just, it's wild. It's money down, right? It's time to score. And that's what happened. Sean Clifford played horrendous in the first half. They bounced back and just couldn't score in the red zone. And their kicker, Jake Pinneger, missed two very makeable field goals. And Indiana's kicker, Charles Campbell, made his two field goals. That's what happened. That's why Indiana beat Penn State. It came down to red zone offense and defense. Wild. Now, here's the deal. That is the end of the normal show. And because it's the first week of Big Ten football and Buckeye football, we're going to actually put the whole show out to the public just so you get the Buckeye breakdown. But just FYI, in the future, this is the cutoff of the public show. So $2.99 a month, sign up on Patreon or don't, and you get half the show. And we're not always going to put the Buckeye show behind the paywall, so to say. So don't freak out about that, but just sign up. $3 a month. You get all the full episodes. We're going to give this one to you now just because I'm a nice guy. But here it is. Let's talk about the Buckeyes. So those were the other games in the Big Ten, but I want to talk about the Buckeyes because, well, they're the number two team in the country now, I saw. They jumped. They finally played a game. So first I want to give you kind of my reaction to the game, and just kind of as I'm going through it, kind of notes that I took, right? First drive was a little scary. Right, Nebraska jumped out 7-0. The defense looked rusty, like they had jitters. They looked very leaky. Tough Borland is still a below average athlete and linebacker. I don't care if his coach made him a champion or not. I don't give a shit. Marcus Hooker actually didn't impress me at all, which I was hoping he would. And he looked wildly stiff and unathletic on Luke McCaffrey's long run to set up their first touchdown. Master T got the start, which I had heard from Tony Alford that he was going to be the guy that got the start. They actually played similar amounts of snaps. Master Teague is a straight ahead back. He is exactly what I said he was. I watched it all game. He has okay vision. If he gets a crease, that big son of a bitch can roll. And he is a straight line back. He is as probably the best short yardage and goal line back in the United States of America. He is powerful, powerful. And the first two passes, you saw what the offense is going to be all year. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. By the way, I mentioned it before, that Garrett Wilson prop was stealing money. And if I was a true gambler, I would have put $1,000, maybe $10,000 on it that he was going to have over four catches. Like he will have over four catches in every game if I can make that bet. Good Lord. So they put Garrett in the slot, which I think was probably the necessary move. I don't know that it's best for Garrett, but the good news is Ryan Day has he's so brilliant offensively. He knows how to get those guys where he wants them on certain schemed up plays. And then my guy, Jameson Williams, was at the X. So it was Olave, Garrett, and J-Mo. And I thought the offense was outstanding. Justin Fields played almost as well as you can play. He took one sack that he should have thrown the ball away. That's one of the biggest things he had to improve. We'll talk about him in depth more in a minute, but I thought the pass pro was outstanding in the first half. The offensive line picked up twists and blitzes. The first half, he was kept clean. The second half, they struggled, and Nebraska had some unbelievable twist blitzes where they plug a linebacker and twist D linemen, and it was hard. Harry Miller and Josh Myers didn't pick it up well. There was a sack in the third quarter that was a badass blitz, and I should draw it up and tweet it out. It was a blitz and twist, and it's one of the hardest things for O-linemen to pick up. And they attacked Harry Miller and Josh Myers, which is the weakness in pass pro that we now know about. And it was just beautifully schemed up. And it's really hard to pick up those blitzes and twists, especially with a O-lineman that's not as experienced. So back to Master Teague. Here's what you are going to get from him. He displayed it on his 1-yard touchdown run. You're going to get power, a big back, running through contact. I don't think he's an elite back, but I do. I think he's the best short yardage back in America. On the defense side of the ball, Tommy Togiai is a big dude on the interior D-line. And him and Haskell Garrett played about as well as anyone's played on the interior D-line at Ohio State in a while. Haskell was a stud, an absolute stud. So first of all, before, let's, instead of talking about football, I know Haskell very well. I recruited him. He was one of my favorite guys that I've recruited. I love recruiting other positions, and somehow it was always D lineman. But great kid. So really happy for him that he's back. He's healthy. You know, they were able to, I mean, nothing bad happened. He got shot in the face like a month ago or 2 months ago. Just crazy. But it was solid interior D line play. The receiver group, I'm going to tell you right now, they blocked. It was atrocious. The blocking on the perimeter was atrocious. It was one of the major issues I saw in the game. You can't be pretty little pass catchers. You have to block to be a dominant group, and it was all day. You saw it on the one bubble screen to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They just ran through Jameson Williams and hit him for a one-yard loss. That's what you can't take for granted. They need to block a lot better. And then we don't have an answer at punt returner. I mean, Garrett Wilson was back there twice, and then DeMario Call was back there a second time. And what I'm confused about is why, and I love DeMario. I think he could be a good punt returner. But why do we have a guy back returning punts that didn't play a single snap on offense? DeMario didn't play a snap. And I'm not here to say he should or shouldn't, but I know this. If you don't get on the field on offense, you shouldn't be the punt returner. Right? Seems like common knowledge. So I'm going to withhold anything else about it because for all I know, he could have been a punishment or something. He didn't get to play on offense. But they had a 78-yard drive to score to tie it at 14. Nebraska did, and they were running straight at the Silver Bullet defense. Ohio State had to go for fourth down three times. Now, one was negated by a legal procedure, but they had to rely on a fourth down call three times in the first half. And then I also, as I mentioned, Harry Miller struggled in his first start in pass pro. And then on third and one, where Trey Sermon gets hit in the backfield and Harry didn't even see the blitzer as he pulled around on the power play. And if you go back and watch that clip, there's actually two options in scenario. It's not really on Harry Miller, but they ran power, right? Which is where you kind of block back. It's a gap scheme. You block back, pull the guard around, kick out with the tight end. And there's a couple things that need to happen, right? If a guy blitzes off the edge, there's two options. What really needs to happen is Luke Farrell needs to kick out the blitzer and the O-line rakes the defensive front. What that means is, you think about it. If you line up a defensive end and you bring a blitzer off that side, what's the defensive end going to do? He's not going to go outside also. That's two people in the same gap. So he'll go inside. That's the D-line moving with the blitz, right? So the O-line, that right tackle, let's say, that defensive end wants to go inside of the right tackle. The right tackle has to see the blitz as it starts to trigger and rake that defensive end over inside of him to block him. And then the tight end can kick out the blitzer, and you got a nice play. The guard pulls around, cleans up the second level linebacker, and you're out the gate. And it didn't happen on that play. So that either that needs to happen, or they're going to go hard run action and just blow them off the ball, and Harry Miller has to see it and adjust. Those are only two options. So if you don't want the guard to have to do that, I would never want the guard to have to do that, but the way it played out, that was the only option, or the tight end needs to block it. So anyways, 24-14 at half. I thought it was, you know, some rusty. But what happened was QB run and scrambles killed Ohio State's defense again. And I'm going to tell you who else impressed me. Steel Chambers. He looks like a nice combination of Trey Sermon and Master Teague. I like Steel Chambers. The other thing that's just absurd was Nebraska had two players ejected for targeting in football. It just changed the entire game. I don't understand why it can't just be a personal foul. Why do we have to eject them? At least give them a warning, right? You give them one warning, and so they know, damn, I really better not do that again. Because a lot of these are incidental. Like a guy goes to tackle low and the ball carrier ducks. Just ridiculous. They had two players ejected for targeting, and I've had about enough of targeting in football. There's a couple examples where you're like, yep, that guy should be ejected. Every other one is just guys playing football and maybe they accidentally hit heads. It's ridiculous. You're changing the game. But the other thing, probably the most insane catch I've ever seen, Jaxon Smith-Njigba's touchdown catch. His entire body was out of bounds, but he snuck a little toe in for the touchdown. Unbelievable. And then we got to see who the backup quarterback is. I'm sure they'll have some political answer about, well, we're going to rotate who goes in. But Jack Miller, backup QB, I didn't think that would happen. I thought they would stick with Gunnar Hoke as the late game quarterback and let CJ Stroud and Jack Miller battle it out. But they made a statement. Maybe it'll motivate CJ Stroud. Maybe it's to keep Jack Miller. I don't know. There's all kinds of different dynamics here because they certainly don't want to lose one of those kids right now. And that's the way of the quarterback nowadays. But let me tell you, the secret weapon is this team. That another thing no one will talk about. Drew Chrisman, the punter, the bottle flipper, is a stud. Two punts, 49 yards per punt, and no return yards. If he can punt the ball 50 yards with great hang time all year, that is a major, impactful weapon for Ohio State. So that was my thoughts on the game. Now let's get into the analytics. First of all, almost 500 yards of total offense, 28 first downs, 8 of 13 on third down, just outstanding. And then Justin Fields was, like I said, about as strong of a first game as he could have had. Needs to get the ball out a little quicker, but it was solid. He was decisive. He had a quick release, strong arm. I feel like he was much improved going through progressions, understanding of the offense, seeing defenses. His one incompletion was a beautiful deep ball to Chris Olave, which I'm calling a drop, but it would have been a hell of a catch. 10 of his 21 passes were over 10 yards. So half were, I mean, this is what you want. This is great QB play. He hit 9 of 10 of those with Olave's drop as one on a well-thrown deep ball. So half of his balls were over 10 yards. He almost should have completed all of them. And here's a wild stat for you. The top three quarterbacks that played football on Saturday for adjusted completion percentage were Justin Fields, 100%, Graham Mertz, 100% from Wisconsin, Adrian Martinez, Nebraska, 93%. The top three quarterbacks in the country were Big Ten quarterbacks. So Fields took 4 sacks. That's an issue that has to be cleaned up, both the pass pro and him getting the ball out. So this is a big knock on him last year. Average time to throw, 2.76 seconds. And some of it is scheme, most of it is not. That's the fourth longest time that he has the ball in the United States of America on Saturday, the fourth longest. He got 10 throws out in under 2.5 seconds, 11 throws out in over 2.5 seconds. So that's got to improve. I said it all last year, and it takes sacks. It's how you get hit when you throw, and you throw picks. It has to get better. And then the receivers. My goodness, the dynamic duo. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, they both were targeted 7 times. So that's the feature. They didn't really throw it to tight ends. They didn't get any other receivers involved. The next closest was Jackson Smith and Jigba. He had 2 targets. One was a bubble screen, and then the other one was his touchdown. And they both go over 100 yards. Garrett scores on a post versus quarters, which quarters coverage, right? It's 4 across. If you get something to hold the safety, then you're one-on-one with that corner. You run a post route, there's no one there. That's why the corners almost always play inside leverage. He just broke off the corner on that post. It was beautiful. And then Olave almost pulled in what would have been a ridiculous catch, climbing the ladder downfield in the middle of the field. Both graded out top 10 nationally this week. So top 10 receivers in the country on Saturday, they both graded out in the top 10. Garrett Wilson, 82%, was 5th. Chris Olave, 77%, was 10th in America. Garrett was absolutely ridiculous. He's now the most productive wide receiver in America. After one game with 7 or more targets, he's the number one most productive receiver. 5.2 yards per route run. Olave, 7th. So just get ready, because this is going to be a magical year. And now that Jalen Waddle's out at Alabama, I believe this is the best tandem duo in a receiver room in the United States of America. But the pecking order seems to be very clear now of Brian Hartline's rotation. It's going to be those two and Jameson Williams, and distant but pushing is Jackson Smith and Jigba, then Julian Fleming, who both of them played 12 snaps, then Cameron Babb is that 6th guy, played 6 snaps, and then G. Scott Jr. played 3. So that's kind of the pecking order of the receiver room as it stands today. Very top heavy, and then a bunch of young talent. So expect that young talent to get more involved maybe mid-season when they start kind of getting some game experience. And I try to tell everyone not to freak out that Julian Fleming was going to be Julio Jones day one. It's going to take time. All right. It's going to take time, and he'll get there because he's talented enough. Same with Jackson, same with all of them. G. Scott too. So I moving to the running back room. I don't fully understand what the deal is at running back. I really don't. When I watched those backs play, Trey Sermon looked like a far more explosive, elusive, and dynamic runner than Master Teague. It wasn't even close. And it was a good split, 30 snaps for Teague, 29 for Sermon. But Master Teague is an above-average back that is in a big-time, powerful, short-yardage back. That's what he is. I'm not saying he can't get better, but he doesn't have great vision. He doesn't have great change of direction. You can see at one time he got open field tackled one-on-one by a DB where it took him 3 steps to try to change direction, and the Nebraska DB just swallowed him up and dropped him. So I don't get it. So I would hope to see more Trey Sermon trending in the future, and let's see what he can do. Maybe he's not much better. I don't know. We didn't get to see enough of him. The offensive line, it was a solid day for the group. I mean, Pro Football Focus put out there they were the highest graded O-line unit in America, but I'm here to tell you there's a ton to work on for Coach Stud. Harry Miller struggled. He's first game, he's young. You expect that. He graded out the lowest starter on the team, 56%. Now, Nick Petit was the second highest grade just behind Justin Fields. So what a stud. We have two tackles at Ohio State that are absolute studs. They'll be NFL players. I mean, they're probably first rounders when it's all said and done. He and Thayer Mumford allowed zero pressures in the entire game. The interior three O-linemen, the guard center, allowed seven. They gave up three sacks, was only better than Minnesota, who gave up five to Michigan. So Ohio State right now is second to last in the Big Ten on sacks allowed. And like I said, running back play was average. Master Teague is right now the 49th most elusive runner in the country on Saturday. He was the 49th most elusive. Breaking tackles, forcing missed tackles. He forced two total. So I think it was a good first game. Justin Fields obviously was phenomenal. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, phenomenal. Disappointed the tight ends weren't more involved in the pass game. Disappointed in the run game. And I think the O-line is going to play better. They got a lot to work on in pass pro with twists, the blitz twist, and the run game, they were not perfect. So a lot to work on, and it's scary that how much better this offense could be if they can get some of that stuff cleaned up. Now, the defense, on the other hand, I have some concerns. First of all, if you watch, this defense is a cut-tackling machine. A cut tackle is where a guy's running and you just go chop his legs out. There's not like a wrap-up. It's not a tackle. You just chop his legs out, which works. It was effective. But here, I'm going to tell you, you want the crystal ball of what's coming? Penn State is going to be hurtling the shit out of us if all we do is cut tackle. I mean, that's what you used to see. Guys, like, when they would go tackle Zeke, he's so powerful. It's like Master Teague. You go try to tackle Master Teague up high, you're going to get run over. So guys would cut tackle Zeke. And what would Zeke do? He would just hurtle over him and keep running. So be ready for that. Teams are going to start doing it because this defense was cut tackling all over the field. Going group by group, I have a lot of concerns on the D-line. The pass rush was just average. Just average. The D-ends were disappointing. 16 total pressures, and they only got home three times. Haskell Garrett led the way. So the best pass rusher, and this is not a knock on anything, Haskell Garrett was phenomenal. He was the best pass rusher on the field, a D-tackle. With the way Ohio State's recruited at D-end, there's no way that should be possible. And third downs, getting Baron Browning in at a stand-up D-end, no way should Haskell lead the team. He had three quarterback pressures, one sack, one hit, one QB hurry. Great game for Haskell, but I don't know where these D-ends are. The phenom, Zach Harrison, only recorded one single pressure, and it was a sack, but he had one pressure. So he's not Chase Young. Not yet. He's talented, but I heard it all that he was going to be the Chase Young. It was going to be Bosa, Chase, Zach Harrison. He might be, but he's not dominant right now. He's just not. The linebacker group was, I don't want to say disappointing, but Tough Borland did not look improved. And I'm starting to question what the hell we're doing here. Like, why? He had a 31% grade, by far the lowest on the team. He gave up four catches on four targets for 59 yards. In pass coverage, this third cover three defense that they're playing most of the time, he looks like an unathletic guy lost in space. He can't find receivers. He doesn't have a great feel. He's certainly getting outrun to the perimeter. I mean, that McCaffrey kid's going to be an unbelievable football player for Nebraska. And when he hit the crease on some of these edge runs, Tough was a step late every time. So I don't know what we're doing. I thought Barron played well. I thought Pete played really well. Some of the young guys showed promise. So I'm mostly concerned that we don't have anyone better than Tough. Ohio State doesn't have anyone better than Tough to put in there. That's the biggest weakness on the defense that I saw. Pass rush and Tough Borland played like he played the last 2 years. There's no same Tough. The secondary, I think, played really well. Sean Wade played really well. Pretty uneventful playing field corner. So they had Sean Wade playing field corner. And I don't know that I love that. I mean, the boundary throw is more common. The boundary throw is more frequent. But maybe they like Sean Wade to the field because of all the space and because he's a good tackler. So he played to the field pretty uneventful. He had one play on a post-wheel combo that was just outstanding. He passed off the post to the middle field safety and came off on the wheel route and almost picked it off. He should have. It was phenomenal. So he played really well, pretty uneventful. Seven Banks was the cover man opposite of Wade the majority of the time. Cameron Brown played 24 snaps, 9 as like the slot corner on third down and stuff like that. And so those are your three, top three corners right there. And I think the disappointing thing is no takeaways through the air. We had no interceptions. One of only four big teams without a pick through game one. It was just not a dynamic Saturday, just solid. It was a solid game by the defense, just decent. Adrian Martinez hurt the defense on the ground, not through the air. He was 1 for 2 over 10 yards throwing the ball. He certainly didn't throw it well, but he hurt the quarterback position. Running the ball is a major concern. We saw it with Trevor Lawrence and Clemson last year, and now we saw it on Saturday. I mean, he and the freshman quarterback, Luke McCaffrey, were the leading rushers in the game, mostly on design QB runs, scrambles, QB runs, and then there was one where there was a schemed up thing with McCaffrey lined up in the backfield with Martinez, but that's a major concern. QB run. It is what it is. So my takeaway from the game needs to improve. The rush defense. It's absolutely unacceptable. I don't care if it's a quarterback, running back, doesn't matter. The rush defense has to get better. 10th in the Big Ten now at rushing defense. Josh Myers in pass pro has to get better. Harry Miller in general has to get better, which he will. He's young. First game. I get it. I'll never forget Taylor Decker's first game when he had to block Khalil Mack from Buffalo all day long. You can have a rough first game. He'll bounce back. I also need to see less Teague, more Sermon. And then the wide receiver blocking has to get better. It's the worst I've seen at Ohio State in 10 years. And I get it. People would be like, well, that's biased coming from you. No, it was awful. The perimeter runs, the screens, the bubbles, the little stuff like that, the receivers were, I mean, they blocked terribly. So what Ohio State is now after that game, they're the 12th overall highest graded team in America on Pro Football Focus, the second highest graded offense behind Alabama, the 5th highest graded passing attack, the 25th highest graded rushing attack, the 36th graded defense, and the 35th run defense. So I know I'm not crazy when I see those things and I see it on film and I'm like, I just get that feeling. And then I write the show and then I go to Pro Football Focus and they're grading right where I would put them. I mean, the defense needs a lot of improvement. And I didn't see much blitzing. I need to go back and look at that. We didn't blitz much. It's like we just went with pass rush. We're used to having Chase Young and Nick Bosa and guys like that and Davon Hamilton and I mean that just get home, right? On a four-man pass rush, maybe a twist. It's got to be better. They got to do better. So that's my analysis of the game. We're obviously going to have a great preview episode talking about this Penn State matchup. But I'm warning you, Penn State is not a bad football team. They beat the brakes off of Indiana in every aspect of the game other than the red zone. And Sean Clifford just trying to throw the game, I guess, at the beginning. So that's it. That's what it is. So as I mentioned before, if you haven't yet, go check out the event. Come hang out with Braxton Miller and I down at the Point on Lane. Ace on Lane is the name of the event. Go to menacetosports.com. Check it out. Get your gambling picks from patreon.com/menace2picks or at menace2picks on Twitter. And if you're listening to this, you're a subscriber. So I'm not going to be mean to you, but I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you were entertained. We're going to talk Buckeye football and the national landscape, Big Ten football, Midwest football all year right here. Do me a favor. Tell a couple friends about the show. I'm trying to make it grow. If you like the insight, if you like my take on things, tell some friends. Help me make it grow. I appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in. I love you. But to the rest of the people that don't subscribe, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Justin Fields, hello, Columbus, 51 yards. And it's blocked. Ohio State got it. Blocked out of the air. Towards the end zone. Touchdown, Buckeyes. Here's Fields over the middle. Touchdown, Buckeyes.
Hit anyway. Sean Wade off the corner, and Lawrence is still down.
Fields again looking to throw. Loops the ball up. Leaping catch by Garrett Wilson down inside the 10 as the freshman makes a play.
Unbelievable catch by the true freshman from Austin, Texas.
And even more. Sermon still on the move. Sermon to the corner. Touchdown.
Oh, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya. Awesome.